Stay up to date on the green and gold all off season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Potawatomi Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
So I was talking to a buddy of mine. I know Tausch doesn't think I have any friends, but I do. I have some, and some of them are famous, like this song says. But he listens very regularly to our programming. And totally... Yeah, well, thank him for his service. Yeah. Totally unprompted. Now, Brian Bulaga gets his fair share of critiques. He's got that one guy on Twitter that hates the fact that he says, especially, gets after him for that. But my buddy, John is his name, could not stop gushing about how good this guy is. That I thought that was pretty cool. I'm guessing
it's
kind of like
Wesley.
It was not John Wesley. It was different John. But he does say especially a lot. It's also a fair critique. It is Brian Bulaga on Wildy and Tausch. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good, and especially
today
on a beautiful. Yeah, especially. But no, that's a fantastic compliment. I appreciate it. I do my best every time I get on, either with you guys or with Uncle Homer, and just try to keep it real. And
yeah,
have you liked working with Uncle Homer? Because he's
question.
An acquired taste.
Like, he is an acquired taste. Early on, I was a little nervous. I'm like, I'm not sure how long I could go on with him. He's off the cuff. He's kind of wild. And then I've kind of just I've grown into how he is and how he likes to operate, and it's been good. Like, I enjoy it. I think he's fun to work with. You never really know what he's going to talk about. And to me, that makes it exciting every time I jump on with him.
I agreed with his assessment wholeheartedly. I'm sorry I missed you guys on Monday. I'm hoping I can make up for it when you and Homer do your Thursday edition, if you're not too busy on the farm. I do need to ask you though, because you don't strike me as the kind of guy that gets nervous. Did you get nervous as a player, first of all, like, you know, before matchups with Bruce Irvin or whatever it might have been? Were there any times where you were nervous as a player?
He's such a jerk, isn't he? Like, he just can't help himself. He's got... I don't know if you know, he's got perfect kids. They eat all
true.
Of their vegetables and everything else. And nothing, but Jason loves to throw pot shots whenever he can. Have you noticed that about him?
I mean, listen, he's okay
especially
to do it because
when
mean,
you're on, Blue, especially when you're here.
Yeah. Especially when we talk about the one game in Seattle, probably like the most disaster game of my 12-year career. Which, hey, I get it. We can talk about it. I mean, I think I've talked about it. But after that game, I was never nervous to go against Bruce Irvin again. In my time playing ball, I was not nervous. But, you know, before games, I think I had a good nervous energy to me. I always felt that if the butterflies were gone and you weren't nervous before games, mm-hmm. it's time to get out, because that mm-hmm. just means it's, you know, you're numb to the fact of what you're going to go do, at least in my opinion. So I was nervous every game I walked out there. One, because you're in front of a national audience in on TV, and the D linemen are wanting to embarrass you, and you're playing not only for yourself and your teammates, but your family. And then you think about, well, you know, if I have a terrible game, what are they going to hear about tomorrow? So there's a lot that goes into it. At least I thought so. So I got nervous, but I always found myself using that nervous energy and using it for good on the field.
All right. And by the way,
Blue,
you know,
is it always what you most, for me, I was always most nervous after I came back from warmups. Like, you go out and warm up, and then it was that little 5 or 10 minutes. So I would go look in the playbook or look over the play sheet one last time and then just try and settle in. And then always after the first play, it's just back to being a football player. But that was always the time when I was the most nervous. How about you?
Yeah, for sure. That little wait in the locker room and then intros and then the national anthem. And until you got that first play out of the way, regardless of if you were playing the worst team in the league or you were going against the best defensive end in the league, like, it was always, it's got to get the first play out of the way, because then it's like just back to playing football. I'm not in my own head thinking about the what ifs. You're just going out there and doing it. So, the warm-ups were always fine. It's just that, like, you're right, that 10 minutes of hanging around there, just sitting there, and the coaches are coming in, they're telling you about what guys are active, inactive, they're lining up like this in pregame, you're just like, just leave me alone. Like, I don't want to talk about this. Like, I already got enough on my plate. I don't want to know what they're doing. Like, it doesn't matter. They're probably not even going to do that. But that's – I agree with you on that.
All right. I am a jerk, and you know I love you like a brother. So brothers do give each other grief once in a while.
It's okay. And if, it's okay. And
here's the thing. If I had any stories that you had read that were of the same quality as that performance that day, you could be crushing me, because there's plenty of those. There's more than just one in 12 years like you. The reason I ask about your nervous nature or lack thereof is because Tausch and I have run into a teammate, Kyle Wallace, who I know you know from your various appearances. He does KBN with Kyle. He's Kyle. With Ben Brust and Brad Nortman. And he is like super fan 99 when it comes to the Packers. And yet he is confessing that he is nervous about this team. And I don't know if it's like he's nervous, Tausch, because everybody is talking about how good they're going to be, or if he actually sees flaws, because this is the first time I've heard anyone this offseason not just talk about how good this team's going to be. So where are you on your nervousness scale, Brian, about what could go awry with this team?
I was on with KB on Monday, and he was talking about how Jordan Love is the most overhyped player. And I'm like, dude, you got to settle down. you really got to settle down. And I can tell he's a little nervous, and I'm not sure if he preferred the way it was last year where there were absolutely no expectations. He's been a Green Bay Packer fan for a long time. I can't remember the last time there was a season besides the last season that there weren't very high expectations for the team. So does that mean every offseason he just goes into this thing a nervous wreck? I don't know, but I prefer to like and follow the team and cover a team that does have these high expectations. And you do expect a lot out of them. And I don't have a bunch of issues with this team, right? Like, I think I've been very clear that the issues that I've seen are in the secondary, especially at the corner position opposite of Jair. Like, how that's going to play out in training camp is obviously something that I'm looking forward to seeing. And then obviously, the other one is if Zach Tom isn't able to play week one, which, again, I think he will be. But if he is not able to play week one, what does the lineup look like? Who's playing where? Who's doing what? And kind of how does that look like? And if the answer of the Zach Tom, if that whole thing gets settled out by, I doubt he plays any preseason games. But say he's doing some stuff at practice by preseason number two, maybe three, I'll feel a lot better about what's going on up front, right? Like that, there would be a lot of, questions to answer. And then the next thing is just secondary, and who's going to step up and play that opposite corner position of Jair? Because we all know with the way this defense did it, because if we look at the way it was implemented in Seattle, Sherm was on one side. No one picked on Sherm. When they picked on Sherm, he was able to jump routes and do things like that. I expect that to be very, very similar with Jair and how Jair is going to fit into this thing. And then you'd always pick on the opposite corner. You'd look at the other corner. And they always had good guys, Maxwell and a few other guys. They always had solid guys, but that's who you picked on, right? And to me, that's my biggest concern, is who's going to be opposite of him and who our team's going to go to pick on. And if we have someone that fills in, if it's Stokes and he steps up and he ends up, being that first-round pick we all thought he was – all my questions are answered. And I feel really good about the team that we have.
Yeah, I just, the nervous part of this, can you be nervous about Jordan Love? Because I felt like that's kind of where Kyle's at. He doesn't want to pay him. He wants him to take like a Daniel Jones contract. It's like, well, that's not how the world works, man. I just don't have any reservations about paying Jordan Love because Brian Gutekunst, Russ Ball, and Matt LaFleur have all said, well, at least said, those two have said publicly, not Russ, we know this kid. We know what he's about. We saw what he did in the second half of the season. That really, to me, is the only thing that you can really be super nervous about is he going to play like he did in the second half of the season, or if he plays like he did in the first half and he's taking up that big of the cap, that's what I think Kyle's nervous about. I don't have any of those reservations because I believe Russ Ball will get this contract structured in a way that the Packers will feel really good about. If he is playing great, it's awesome. And if he's not, I don't think it's going to be as burdensome as maybe everybody else. So that's, I think, where Kyle's coming from. But I just don't have any of those reservations.
Yeah, I don't have any of those either. And I think we look at, and I've said this so many times, and I think what we saw in the first half of the season was a culmination of a lot of things, right? I think we saw very hesitant play calling from LaFleur. He was very protective of him, wasn't aggressive with Jordan Love. I think we saw really bad offensive line play. I think we saw receivers that weren't confident, didn't really know what they were supposed to be doing. And then obviously, I'm not saying Jordan Love was innocent in the whole thing. Obviously, he had his hand in it. Mm-hmm. But when all those things are going against you, it's very hard for a quarterback to play like himself. And finally, midway through the season, or I always reference the Pittsburgh game, even though they lost, is kind of when all that changed. And we saw a different guy in that Pittsburgh game moving on. And that's who I think Jordan Love is. I really do. And then with him having that confidence and the way he plays, that gives confidence to everybody else. It gives confidence to the guys up front. It gives confidence to the receivers that if I'm open, it doesn't matter if I'm wide receiver number one or wide receiver number four. If I do my job, I get open, I'm getting the ball. He's going to spread it around. So I think there's a very positive outlook on how this is going to go for Jordan Love this season. Because I think he's going to pick up where he left off. Sure, he may have a blip throughout the season. Everyone has a little blip. As long as it's not like a 8-game blip like we saw early in this, last year, I don't think I have any issues with giving him this monster contract. Because I think who he is what we saw at the end.
Yeah, there's only one aspect to his game that makes me wonder if there will be more than one little blip or two, and I'll explain that coming up. We got more time with Brian Bulaga. No more gratuitous shots. We are especially excited to have him here for another Wednesday. I will not take any more shots at him. I know how irritating that can be, especially from someone who calls you like a brother. So more with Brian Bulaga straight ahead. Stick around.
On the air, on demand, on social, on Wisconsin Sports. Serving Wisconsin sports fans, this is 100.5 ESPN.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
All right, before we shift gears with Brian Bulaga, Brian, I did have one question I wanted to ask you, and that is this. I'm working on the State Journal preview series for the season, and I started writing the quarterbacks yesterday. And the one thing that nags at me is kind of like you talked about with the expectations. No one really knew how good or not good Jordan Love was going into the season. And I'm not just talking about us. I'm talking about opposing teams. Now, they have 17 regular season games of film. They have two playoff games. They know that he ain't no slouch based on what he did in the second half of the season. But they also are looking at that tape, and they probably have some ideas on what they can do to disrupt him and throw him off. Can you help me understand how that factors in to what he may or may not be able to do in year two as the starter?
Yeah. He now has tape for all these D coordinators to see what impacted him the most, what bothered him, what coverage, what disguises, things that maybe he didn't do well, what types of throws weren't his cup of tea, and the way defenses maybe rotate at the snap and just disguise different things. Maybe that gives the coordinators a little more, you know, ammo to go with. But if you have a quality quarterback, right, like if he's good, and I'll only relate it back to the guy I had in Aaron Rodgers. Like, everyone knew who Aaron Rodgers was, right? Like, every D coordinator had years of tape on him, but they couldn't stop him. Because if you're that good, you find ways to beat what D coordinators are throwing at you. So great quarterbacks make adjustments on the fly, and they're able to see what teams are trying to do to them within a game, maybe not just, you know, throughout a season, but within a game, and they're able to make adjustments based on what defenses are doing. And I really feel that Matt LaFleur has a good idea of how to counter what D coordinators are doing to him throughout a game as well. So Jordan Love is going to have to step his game up for sure, because he's got the tape that these coordinators around the league can look at, but he's good, man. Like, he's good, and good players make adjustments. And that's the only thing that I always feel, because if you look at all the great players throughout the league, and everyone knows what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, but they can't stop it because they're that good, and guys are able to make adjustments and overcome what teams are throwing at them. So I think, yeah, there's always going to be a learning curve, right? He's still a young starter in the league. There's still more things that he has to see and experience, and he's going to come across. But I think he's a good player that he's going to come across these things, and he'll be able to navigate it because of his talent.
The only reason I wanted to ask you this is because you actually have a unique perspective, because you, as you said, the guy you played with, well, there was another guy you played with in L.A.,
yep.
And he was in the same draft. He played earlier than Jordan Love, but he's a good player, right? Justin Herbert is a very good quarterback. Did you see some of the same stuff, though? Like, did you see him have to go through a little bit of that process in year two? As I know you dealt with injuries, but did you see him have to face kind of some of those similar challenges to overcome?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, his first year, no one really knew what you were going to get from him, right? I mean, he's a big guy. He moves really well. Everyone knows he's got a cannon for an arm. Like, everyone knows that, but you don't really know what's going to settle him or unsettle him, and defenses didn't really know. And then year two, he goes into it, and teams were a lot more mindful of their pass rush because they knew he could get out of the pocket. Herbie wasn't really a big step up into the pocket type of guy because he was so big. He liked to stand back there and see everything. He wasn't really a step-up guy unless he had to run. So teams were very mindful with how they rushed them and the rush patterns. And I mean, as much as I love, you know, Shane Steichen, who was our OC, you know, who's with the Colts now, he was our OC year one compared to what we had year two with Lombardi, you know, two different offenses. I don't think they ever built an offense that really fit him, to be honest with you. Like, he never was in a scheme that really fit him. I always thought the Shanahan LaFleur scheme would be absolutely perfect for Justin Herbert. And I don't know what offense they're bringing in to LA right now. I have no idea. Haven't really done my research on that. We'll just put it that way. But there was never a scheme that fit him. So I'm hoping that's kind of what they've brought in for him, because I feel like if he has that scheme, he's going to absolutely just roast teams because he's so smart. He's got the play action game. If they can get a run game going out there, and how strong his arm is, he can make every throw on the field. But I just never thought that the offense that he was playing in fit him. And obviously he's put up numbers, but we haven't seen that team take a step, so to speak, right? Like, They had the 27-7 lead in the playoffs against the Jaguars and blew it. Like, just things like that, that, you know, if you're really building an offense and a team around a, you know, franchise quarterback, the offense has to fit. And it just has never fit out there. So that'll be an interesting thing to see. And we all got to see Justin Herbert last year, right, in Lambeau Field. We all got to see that offense and kind of the miscues of it. And, you know, he's got so much more. But I'll wrap this back to Jordan Love. Like, there's going to be time. Like, I think this offense fits him great. I love the Shanahan LaFleur. Like, I love this offense. I think it's a great offense. It's really a pro quarterback offense. But there's going to be things that he experiences this year that he didn't experience last year simply based off of film study. And he will adjust to it, just as Herbert has. But I think what LaFleur has in place for him is better structure than what Justin Herbert's had. And that's just the guy. I mean, let's just talk about the franchise in general, right? Like, the Green Bay Packers are in a lot better place than the Los Angeles Chargers. And everything that's from the top down for the Packers is better suited for guys to succeed. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think to Jason's question, we did see Jordan Love play the Lions once, came back on Thanksgiving. And so they did get film, and you know how that is. They're, you know, the same thing with Minnesota. You know, they had kind of had his number with some of their blitz stuff the first time around. And then they go up to the Metrodome or U.S. Bank and absolutely torch him. So that's why, because that is always a question. You have a full offseason, and you know the Bears, Lions, Vikings, Niners, everybody that is a rival to the Packers is looking at saying, he's pretty good. How are we going to slow him down? And why I am not worried, and I think most Packer fans aren't, he was better in those games the second time around than he was the first, and that should be a big attaboy or a positive, look in a positive light if you're talking about his evolution as a player.
Absolutely. I mean, we could all say, like, okay, these teams got, you know, a season worth of tape, but he's also got a season worth of tape that he can watch himself and critique himself and improve himself, and so is our coaching staff. So it goes both ways with this thing. And Tausch, you said it, like, we played a lot of these teams twice last year, and he only got better, right? Like, he only improved. So to me, I'm not that concerned about it. And I'm, again, I always say the NFL, that's why the NFL is the greatest drama on TV, because you just never know how things can go, right? You just it's the most – I mean, unless you have the script, which I never got the script. Unless you have the script, you just have no idea how – the season's going to go or how games are going to unfold. But I couldn't feel better about Jordan Love going into the season. I mean, I feel great about him. And once he gets paid too, I'm going to feel even better about it, because I think that brings a whole nother level of confidence and leadership and all those intangibles that you're looking for when a guy gets that big contract.
Yeah, the guys are going to look at him in a – even in a more different light, more leadership, like you said. Blue, before we let you go, we had a discussion yesterday. There was a couple of different rankings came out, and I think we all that cover this team and watch this team real closely see all of this youth under 25 and think, man, Reed's a stud. Wicks is a stud. Watson could be a stud. You know, Xavier McKinney could be a stud. But there's only one cat. Was it Jaden Reed? And Jordan Love, that was it on two lists of 25 under 25. So are we overvaluing these young players because we see them and we cover it? Or are the national media under-respecting, I guess if that's the word I'm looking for, all of these young players for the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that the national media is undervaluing them. What they really got a good look at with those guys is in the playoffs, right? Like, if you look at the broad scope of the national media, they really had no reason to watch the Green Bay Packers early on, or even as they were trying to get into the playoffs, right? There really wasn't a reason. Like, it was a team that was floating around 500. They could either make it or not make it. You know, they didn't really care, right? Until they burst on the scene into the playoffs, then people started paying attention. And listen, national media and myself, I can't really speculate how they do business, right? Like, I don't know how they rank guys and
just
what they're looking
it, Blue,
at. And,
Blue,
and,
just say it. They're lazy. Just say it. They're lazy.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do their homework, and I know they don't do their homework based on how they pick all pro teams, because they just go to Pro Football Focus and look at a grade and pick a guy. But with that being said, they didn't know anything about these guys. Well, it's just the truth.
Oh, snap.
I mean, it's just the truth. They didn't know anything about these guys until they pounded Dallas in Dallas, right? And then they almost go to San Francisco and almost beat San Francisco. So they weren't even paying attention to what was going on in Green Bay. I mean, we all obviously were, and we saw what they did. And then they didn't have a guy that was like a jump out 1,200-yard receiving yards or 1,000 yards. Like, we didn't have that, right? Like, that's what makes this dynamic of our young receiving group so good, is that they're all very capable. They're all explosive. They're good in their own way. They all bring something different. But none of them had the 1,000-yard season or anything like that. So, like, again, the national media not doing their homework don't really dive into that, because they don't see the numbers that, oh, well, this guy didn't put up this amount or that. Like, they don't look at that. So I'm not shocked by it, and I think more eyes will be opened this year, especially as Green Bay's primetime games have gone up dramatically. Now that there's going to be more primetime games, more eyes on this team, these guys are going to have a better opportunity to show what they're all about to the national media and the national stage.
Yeah, and by the way, I think if you're Matt LaFleur, I'm happy about this. I'm showing this list. I'm slapping this list up on every one of those guys' lockers, saying, nobody thinks you're Jack. You know, everybody was worried after the season ended. Oh, are they going to be reading the press clippings and all this other stuff? Let them read it. Don't let them read Wildy's stuff, because he's, you know, telling them how great they are, but let them read the 33rd team and everything else. Slap that stuff up there, because you know that stuff moves the needle, and it will drive these – it will just continue to drive them to get better and better. And that's what I think Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst were most concerned about after the season, is how are these cats going to handle success? And it sounds like, you know, from a national standpoint, people are looking at like, well, Jordan Love's really good, Matt LaFleur's really good, and then we'll see. I don't know about the defense. We don't know about any of these other young guys. We'll see how it goes. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Matt LaFleur is probably looking at that and loving it. I mean, hey, continue to bring doubt. They doubted us last year, and you guys stepped up. You answered the bell. Let's continue to have everyone doubt us and throw us, you know, kind of in the back row with maybe what people think is a maybe another 500 team or whatever we think. Let's continue to have that underdog mentality. And if you can keep that going for as long as you possibly can with this young roster, that's only beneficial to him, right? The minute, like, and you said it, that was their biggest concern going into it, was, is there going to be a little bit too much overconfidence and a little bit of
no doubt.
You know, and again, I think guys should be confident in themselves. They should expect to go out there and win every single game. They should feel that way. They've put it on tape that they can do that. But to have the buzz outside the building saying that, they're not that good, that's fantastic. You love that. You love that as a team. And the last time I remember even having that was 2010, when we got into the playoffs as a six seed. Oh, they barely got in. They're not that. I mean, they're going to go to Philly and get washed out. And yeah, obviously what happened, you know, we won a Super Bowl. But that's the mentality that LaFleur is probably trying to get into these guys. Like, you're the underdog. No one thinks you guys are worth a jack. And let's go show them again. Let's do this again. And it's only going to play into the Packers' hands, or favor, right? Like, into the favorable hand for them. So I love it. I think it's great.
And all the while, Matt LaFleur ain't thinking we're anybody's underdog. You know, McCarthy used to say, we ain't nobody's underdog. There ain't no underdog here.
Oh, yeah.
But you can at least have the guys feel that way.
Yeah, there is no way that the coaching staff – the general manager, and even the guys on the team think they're anybody's underdog. They don't.
No way.
Yep. I'm not too sure. If I look at the NFL rosters right now and the games that they have on the schedule, I think they feel really good about every game they're going into right now. Mm-hmm. This team fully healthy, they feel really good about going into every game that mm-hmm. they could win every single game. And like they've earned that right, obviously, but they know how talented they are, right? Like they understand the type of players that they have. And as long as they take care of business, you know, they should be able to win every single game. And that's just how I look at this team.
Yeah, but you're right. That is the line that LaFleur is walking, because his messaging all offseason has been, you guys haven't done anything yet. Yeah, you won a playoff game, but what you accomplished last year doesn't mean anything this year. So he, while he knows how good they can be, he is making sure, at least with his messaging, that they don't get overconfident, which is what your point was. I don't get the sense that they are overconfident. I think that messaging is working, but this plays into their hands as coaches to keep that messaging going. All right. We've established that the national media is lazy. I know local farmer Brian Bulaga is not lazy, so we will let you get to planting your orange groves and spending time with Jason and Kelsey, your neighbor's donkeys.
Organic oranges, right?
All he's got to do is slap the tag on them, from what I understand, and then they're organic.
If I put a sticker on it that says organic, that means it's organic.
Well, send us some of those oranges. I will hopefully get to talk to you later this week on the Homer Hour. Brian, we appreciate you, buddy.
Hope so. All right, guys. Take care.
That is the outstanding Brian Bulaga. I just wanted to soften the high praise that John was giving him with my Bruce Irvin misdirection, but he is fantastic, and we're lucky to have him on our team. He joins us once a week here on Wildy and Tausch.